about some kind of pseudo differential calculus related to non-elliptic operators. Okay. So let me start with the examples. And of course, the first example is a differential operator. Okay. So associated to this differential operator, we have a symbol that is nothing but a sub alpha of x times 1 over I c to the alpha. Okay, so there is nothing pseudo here. This is pure differential operator. The second example should be something which is non-local. It's the identity minus the Laplacian times alpha over 2, and in this case now the symbol is a alpha x times 1 plus c squared alpha over 2. Okay, so the second example is what we will call the prototype of a classical pseudo-differential operator of order alpha. So my first example is something as follows. So there is something I should say before writing the first example, is that any time I differentiate with respect to psi in these two examples, I get something which is basically the same but with lower decaying psi. Okay, that's the fundamental property. And the first example is a of x psi equals to e to the I x times the orthogonal of omega. So I am going to fix my attention in dimension 2, alright? And then omega is nothing but the unitary vector associated to psi, and omega perp is minus omega 2 omega 1. Okay? So this is going to be my first example of the kind of symbols I want to consider in this talk. And of course now if I differentiate with respect to psi, because this is homogeneous of degree 0, it's okay. I mean, I get something which is becomes a better power in psi, but I have to pay a price, which is that it is increasing in x, while in the first two examples such a thing does not occur. Okay? And the second example, I keep it calling little a, will be the same, but where I change a little bit the underlying metric. So what is omega tilde perp? So the only thing I have to tell you is what is omega tilde. This is going to be 1, 0, 0, negative 1 times omega. Okay? So it's very much like if in the classical definition of a pseudo-differential operator, you change the notion of the Fourier transform by changing the usual Euclidean metric by a Lorentzian metric. Okay? That's very much what you are doing. And again, this example is has the good property that is homogeneous of degree 0, so every time I differentiate with respect to psi, we'll get decaying psi, but it will grow on x. All right? So these are the examples. And I guess that the next thing I have to say is why these two examples are relevant. I'm sure that you are convinced that the star and the double star are relevant, so I guess that I have to tell you why I'm interested in these other situations. Okay? So the reason is, of course, that I want to solve PDEs. So let me say which are the PDEs. Will be of the type 1 over I, the derivative with respect to t of u equals some operator L of u, which will be of second order, plus a nonlinear term, which will be kind of general. So, but in order to fix the ideas, imagine that it is just a polynomial in the variables u, u bar, gradu bar, and it's really non-linear, meaning that the degree of P is at least 2. Okay? And L is something of the type AJK, maybe too many J's, but there's not too many A's. There is not too much confusion here, okay. So then I will have the second derivative with respect to the x variables. And AJK will be real, symmetric, and just invertible. So I'm not assuming any kind of ellipticity in the operator capital F. Not necessarily constant. So in fact, we are right now at the stage where we can even say that AJK can be AJK of U, U bar, grad of U, grad of U bar. Even more, in the elliptic case, we will allow things of the type an extra term which involves Laplacian of U bar. So the second differential operator. Second differential operator even in U-bar, and this is in the elliptic case, but not in the non-elliptic case. But I don't want to insist too much on this. So, in fact, my main interest, because I'm dealing with pseudo-differential operators, is are linear problems, all right? So forget, if you want, about these non-linearities, and every time you see AJK, you see something which is variable coefficients, but it is basically flat at infinity. So it's flat at infinity. So that means that AJK minus will be at infinity will be something of this type. Okay? So this is the situation. Well, these are the PDEs, and the next thing is, what are the kind of questions I want to study or want to answer on these PDEs? Okay. Well, I will basically answer or talk about two type of questions. The first one, A, is say, I want to know regularity, say, qualitative properties of the solutions. And I have in mind two types of things. The first one will be what it is usually called the local smoothing effect, which is typical of the Schrödinger flows, that although it's a time reversible flow, you have some kind of regularization effect for almost every time of the gain of one half derivative with respect to the initial data, but just locally in x. And something very much related to this is that the usual property that decay implies decay at t equals 0 implies regularity for a later time. And the prototype in this case, again, is the behavior of the Fourier transform, that when you have something that decays, then its Fourier transform is smooth, okay? And the Schrödinger flow behaves very much like the, for example, the Schrödinger flow at time one is a small variation of the Fourier transform, okay? And the second kind of questions, and this one will be the main issue of the talk, is just to solve locally in time the initial value problem. All right? So I guess that you say that I should have written it the other way around. And one first has to deal with the solution and then to try to say properties of the solution. But it turns out that the way these symbols appeared was precisely in that order. Okay? Say that again?
Is radon transform?
That's a good example. That's a good question, I'm sorry. And the answer is, I don't know. I will have to check. Okay? In any case, it's very much. Let me see. In the random transfer, what you do is you give a point and you make the average in that direction. In here, the typical situation you are, I give you a point, so this is, I fix the center, I give you a point x, and then you integrate in the orthogonal direction. Okay, so it's. Alright? Is that clear? So given a point, I integrate. So, I mean, it has some flavor. Okay, so now a little bit of the history of the problem, right? So let me say a few previous results. About question A, and in fact symbols of the type 1 were studied by Craig, Capeller, and Strauss. Back in the 95. Okay? And they were, as I said, mainly dealing with the question about regularity, say, qualitative properties of the solutions, okay? So about question B, of course there is a huge literature, but I want to call your attention on the case where you have nonlinear terms which involve derivatives, say, something of the type still in dimension 2, of this type. Okay? This is the example I have in mind, or the examples I have in mind. So for this type of problem in, and I'm speaking about general results in the sense that I don't care anything about the structure of the nonlinearity, right? Because of course there are many other very specific examples where many good things were said. Okay, so I'm speaking just about general results. So a general result in this direction was given by Koenig, Poncet, and myself. And we assume a small initial condition. And this was in 93. And this was a real perturbation theorem. So you just look at the constant coefficient case, and you prove some kind of regularity, very much in the spirit of what I have called A1, the local smoothing, which is that when you have a right-hand side on the Schrödinger equation, then you gain one derivative with respect to local in X with respect to the right-hand side, and because you gain one derivative, then you can deal with gradient terms, all right? And the problem is that the amount of inequalities that you have of this gain of regularity is just one. I mean, the sense that you only have basically one inequality, which fixes in a very precise way the scaling, and you cannot avoid it, and then you need to assume a smallness. All right? So, then now is the question is, can you try to prove the result without the smallness condition? And then later on, there is a work by, I think the 1 year later, by Hayashi and Ozawa, that removed the smallness in one dimension. Then came a work by Chiara, that in the elliptic case, this was, I guess, 94 also, for any dimension, And of course, in this case, L is the Laplacian. Okay, so it's constant coefficient in the first, in the second order terms. So then, with Koenig and Ponte, we prove the general case. So let me write it this way. Okay, without the smallness assumption on the data. And this was, I don't remember, say, 96, something like that. 96, 97. And in order to do that, okay, so I have to say a few words about the Chiara result. Chiara result uses in a very strong way a very elemental and useful idea by Doi, which found the right way of obtaining, or at least what I think is the right way of obtaining, the local smoothing property for general Schrödinger equations, if you want general dispersive equations. All right? And Doi's idea is also nice because he only needs classical pseudo differential operator. So very much in the spirit of the second star example you have in there. Okay? What happens is that in order to deal with the terms that appears in grad u bar, okay, Doi's method does not work, and then Chihara has to use an extra idea that does not work in the non-elliptic case. Okay? It does not work in the non-elliptic case. So in order to treat the non-elliptic case, we use a trick due to Takeuchi that allows to reduce the problem of dealing with these terms in here using just Calderon and Baillencourt calculus, what is some people call the exotic symbols. All right? But unfortunately, this trick by Takeuchi does not work when you consider variable coefficients of second order. Right? Then the talk of today is how you can extend this result to the general situation where you have variable coefficients in the leading term that, as I said, is they are flat at infinity, and of course they have, you have to assume some extra assumptions like non-trapping of the corresponding bicharacteristics. Okay? A final remark is that, in fact, we have been able to push the method by Chiara and Doi to deal with the real, I mean, the complete nonlinear or semilinear Schrödinger equation in the elliptic case. In the elliptic case. Using just classical symbols. Okay, so in fact, we are able to avoid the use of the first kind of examples in some sense, although I do like them. Okay. All right. So now let me go on and tell you which are the difficulties of this type of nonlinear PDEs, okay, and this is what is usually called the loss of derivatives. All right, so let's do just a little bit of exercise in energy estimates. So I'm dealing with this type of situation, so forget about the nonlinear term. Well, and I will consider just linear case. Right, so my example will be something of the type, a derivative with respect to t of u, so l of u plus something like b1 grad of u plus b2 grad of u bar plus zero order. And this is, these two guys here, which are vectors, are linear. Yes, and they are just linear. They depend just on x. and if you want on T, but not on the unknown U, or its derivatives, right? And I want to compute the L2 derivative, the derivative of the L2, the derivative of the L2 norm, all right? So this is a small exercise. So let me put the I here. Okay, and then I have a different B1 and B2, but I haven't told you which are B1 and B2, so I am in business, all right? Okay. So when the derivative falls on here, what I get is I L U, right? And when the derivative falls on the right-hand side, then I get U I L U. And then I will have first-order terms on U, and the analogous on the right-hand side, plus zero-order terms on U. Right? But this is nothing but minus I U L U. But I was saying that L was real and symmetric, right? So this cancels out. And these terms, these two terms disappear. All right? Okay. Now what happens with the first derivatives? Well, in principle, they are in here, the first order terms. What about the zero order terms? Well, I am okay because I am only looking at local existence results, and I have a control of the L2 norm. So if I assume, for example, that the zero order terms are bounded, then, and I don't have the first order terms, then I have the usual differential inequality, and then Gronwald tells me that I am okay, right? So the question is, what happens with the first derivatives? All right, so. Then let's put ourselves in the most simple situation, which is n equals 1. And let's look at the equation . What I was doing upstairs is nothing but multiplying the equation by u bar, right, and try to integrate by parts. So if I, sorry, there is a second derivative here. So if I multiply by u bar, this term is okay. The calculation I have done on that backbone. This term is also okay, right, because it's a complete derivative. It's the derivative of u bar squared. So I can integrate by parts, and if I assume that v2 is okay, then I am in business. But this one, it is not so clear. If the imaginary part, sorry, the real part of B1 is identically zero, then it's also good because it disappears in the integration by parts. Because I will take just the real part of everything I get in here. But if the imaginary part, the real part is not zero, so imagine that B1 is purely, it's just a real function, then I am in trouble, because if, sorry, I put the I should be here. Ah, the I should be here. I'm sorry. So now it's okay. If the I is here, and I look at this term, and B1 is real, so this is okay, but if B1 is real, then this is pure imaginary, this is real, so basically what they have is Cauchy-Riemann equations, right? And then this cannot be, it's not an evolution problem, right? So I have a serious abstraction in there, okay? So, and this is the what usually is called the loss of the of derivatives issue in trying to get energy estimates for Schrödinger flows. Okay, but I have said already that if I only have zero order terms, then I am okay. And we all know in 1D that there is a small trick of how to avoid first order terms, right, which is the use of the integrating factor. So, I guess that I can use this before. Okay, we can say, well, let's change the unknown and define a new unknown, which will be written in terms of some operator k acting on u. And what I want to understand is what happens with the second derivative of the new unknown. Then this will give me k of the second derivative of u, which is okay, plus the commutator. So, if I make this to be b1 k of b1, the derivative with respect to u, plus zero order terms, I am okay, right? Because the equation to be satisfied by little b will be something which does not have first order terms. And in fact, in the case of 1D, we know that the way of defining this is nothing but the exponential of 1/2. Let me see if I... Yeah, so there's a plus there. So the primitive of B1 times U. Okay? That I, instead of this, I prefer to write it as the exponential of the integral, 1/2 of the integral from 0 to infinity of B1 x plus s ds times u. Okay? It's basically the same up to a constant. So I don't say here which is the primitive I take, and then. Alright? So, well, it's a small trick. I mean, it's a small calculation to see that now the equation for b will be 1 over I dt of b equals the second derivative with respect to x of b plus 0 over. And then, in principle, I am business. This was, I mean, you have to work more than this, but this is the basic idea by Hayashi and Ozawa. Okay? There is an extra remark I have to make, which is that this operator K does not change the good property of the grad U bar term. In the sense that when I look at the term in grad U bar, so this is not completely correct. I mean, this is true as long as I don't have grad U bar terms. But when I look at the new term in B bar, it's of the same type, maybe with another B2. Okay? But it's good for the integration by parts. Okay? The second thing is, of course, if I want to go back, I want to compute, if I know B, I want to compute U. Right? So in fact, I want that if the L2 norm of B is bounded, I want the L2 norm of U to be bounded. So that tells me that better if this quantity here is finite and bounded. Okay? So a natural condition is to assume that the integral of B1 has to be finite. So that means that you need some kind of decay in the first order terms. And this is the so-called mesoatagonism. Because of course, if you look at it and just the real part and in its higher dimensions and in dimension one, this is very obvious, but of course, in higher dimensions, you have to work a little bit more. So then the natural question is, well, what can we do in the n-dimensional case? Well, then that is the equation. We want to find a k such that the commutator of k with capital L, it is minus k, well, you say minus, I'm sure that he's right. You have algebra involved, there is, I'm sure I have a mistake. Okay. So B1 times the graph. Acting on U, I want this. Plus, if you want, zero order. Well, and this is an equation, so there must be some algebra behind all this. And if you try to solve this equation just using the examples like a star, you cannot do it unless that big one is a very specific thing, mainly a gradient. So the algebra says that if you want to solve this, it is not enough with classical differential operators. So you have to look for something different. Okay? And then if you look for something different, you use the Fourier transform, and you end up saying that in order to solve this question in higher dimensions, the K, which is the symbol of the operator capital K I'm looking for, has to be of the type exponential of 1/2 times the primitive from 0 to infinity of b1 of x plus s psi dot psi ds. So this is the symbol. Okay? This is in the case 1. So when I mean in the case 1, I mean when I take L to be the Laplacian. And in the second case, I keep it calling k, has to be the exponential of 1/2 the integral of x1 plus s tilde dot c dx. And I'm going to stick now just in dimension 2 to fix the ideas. Okay? So in this case, now I'm considering L to be the second derivative with respect to x minus the second derivative with respect to y. Okay? And c tilde is written here. Okay? All right? What happens in the general case, meaning when you have a variable coefficient situation, then the symbol, the integral in here, has to be the integral along the bicharacteristic flow. Okay? And, okay, so let's try to fix the ideas a little bit further. And which are the examples, the typical examples of B? So B, typically, B1, is going to be like a smooth version of the characteristic function of the ball centered at zero and radius capital R divided by some power of capital R, right? Well, that's clear. If you look at this Mithrata condition, I need some kind of decay in order the whole thing to converge. All right? Okay, imagine that. So, and afterwards, I mean, after you want, there is some kind of scaling working in the problem, so, well, assume that capital R is nothing but 1. Okay? Then this is the characteristics, the bicharacteristics that starts at some given point, x, with some given direction, right? Then if you don't hit the target, it's okay. But if you hit the target, better if you leave it infinite time, right? Because otherwise, this integral is in S, it becomes infinity, and then it's not working, okay? So I have my ball here. And I want the trajectory to leave at some given point. Big one? Well, it's imagine that it's I'm giving you just one component of the big one. Okay? Yeah, thank you. Just one component of big one. All right. But so that's the only thing I'm gonna say about the general situation where you have variable coefficients. Hereafter, I will just focus my attention in these two examples. And of course, you have to do some work in order to reduce yourself to these two examples. Okay? So, my next task is to convince you that this is basically example one, and this is basically example two. All right? So of course, in here, this is very reminiscent of the X-ray transform, by the way. Right? Okay. All right, so, okay, let me, first of all, a simple change of variable. So if I call omega the unit vector associated to psi, then tells me that I can write k of xc as the integral, so forget what, I keep, from 0 to infinity of b1 x plus s omega dot omega ds. Okay? And then we see immediately that this is homogeneous of degree 0, right? As the two examples 1 and 2. The next thing is to write x, given omega, to write s, x, sorry, as the projection onto omega plus the orthogonal projection. Okay? Then I write instead of x this quantity, and then I make a new change of variable in s now, and this can be written as the exponential of 1/2 the integral starting at x dot omega to infinity of f1 x dot omega perp times omega perp plus s omega ds. Okay? So now let's look at our example, which is the unit ball. B1, take one component of B1, which is the characteristic function of the unit ball, right? Then the support of K is contained in the unit ball plus S times of omega. Right? That's it. Otherwise, that integral is zero. I mean, if omega, the orthogonal projection of x along omega is very large, then that is zero. So imagine that omega is in this direction, then the support is in here. All right? So just a small remark. So this is omega, and imagine that I give you an x which is at the given distance modulus of x, right? And I compute, so basically k is 1, is 0 here and 1 here, right? This, of course, you have to take a smooth version of the characteristic function, right? So now if you give me omega and I make, so this is x, this is the angle 1 over modulus of x. So if I compute the derivative in the xi variable in this direction, for example, I go from 0 to 1 in an angle of size 1 over x. So that's telling me that it is growing like modulus of x, right? Which is one of the properties I was mentioning at the beginning of examples 1 and 2, right? And the bad set, if you want, the region which in principle is bad is precisely in the direction of omega. It is written here. Okay. But on the other hand, because it is homogeneous of degree 0, I can always compute the derivative with respect to the normal direction in psi, and this is going to be 0. Then you have the nice identity that the inner product that if I take the usual exponential, I differentiate it with respect to psi, I multiply by psi, how is this? Yes. Then I get this is nothing but 1. Okay, and this is the fundamental observation by Craig, Capeller and Strauss that tells you that instead of integrating by parts in any, say, along any possible differentiation, you do it just in these radial directions, then you can obtain decay in x every time you differentiate. But this has to happen, I mean, you obtain the decays here, this has to happen as long as x is parallel to psi, which is the case in that situation. You have omega there, which is that direction, and the bad region is precisely the one that goes in the omega direction, right? So this is the elliptic situation. Let's look at the non-elliptic situation, right? So I have my ball, and now instead of taking omega in that direction, I'm going to take omega in one of the characteristics directions of my Lorentzian metric, which is 1, negative 1, right? Then what happens is that in this case, omega tilde, so omega is going to be, say, 1, 1, right? So omega tilde is 1, negative 1. But omega tilde perp is then negative is 1, 1 again. So which is the same as omega. Okay? So when you now do this computation, my bad set is not the one in the direction of omega, but the one in the orthogonal direction of omega. Okay? And then, of course, that trick does not work. All right? So, the next thing is, well, basically, what you do is just starting with that integral I have on the second line, you, by simply using the Fourier transform, you, I mean, just a small computations tell you that your real problem is something of this type. You can reduce your case to study something of this type. Okay? And then the way you treat this is by, in the elliptic case, you can always say that phi of c is the Fourier transform of the anti-Fourier transform of the Fourier transform. So then you end up looking at things of the type, so this in the elliptic case, and something similar in the non-elliptic case. It turns out that in the elliptic case, these symbols are good. Okay? So then you can reduce yourself, you can reduce to study just this type of thing, and then summing up properly things, you will get your integrating factor that will solve your problem. Okay? However, in the non-elliptic case, it's very simple to see that this type of symbol is not good enough, and then you have to keep working with this type of situation, where phi, so this is not good enough, and then you have to consider things of the type phi x dot product with the omega tilde perp, where phi is, say, in a finite version of the Schwarz class, meaning that I need a finite number of derivatives with a finite number of polynomials to decay of the function phi. All right? So how much time do I have? I am done? Should minus 1 minute. Let me just to write one theorem, okay? And this was so it's a joint work with Koenig, Ponte, and Rolbung, which says that if the pseudo-differential operator AXD is of the type I am mentioning here, so then Okay? So, of course, you have to do some kind of composition results, which are very poor, and some adjoint results, and those kind of things. Okay, the proof is kind of involved. I mean, of course, I don't have any time to talk about this. I thought at the beginning I was able to do it, but I'm afraid I can't. So thank you very much for your attention. Yes? Sorry, which is your question? Star, yes? Well, we are just working with the case of order two. You mean when you have higher dispersion? Is that your question, or? Well, no. We fix our attention just in the dispersion given by the versions, I mean, modifications of the Laplacian. But well, I guess in principle everything should work. But of course you have to work much more, and it's very unclear which are the conditions on the operator and all that. Okay. But we didn't look at that. Well, if you want, you can call it that way. But they are not homogeneous of degree one in the phase. I mean, the phase is not homogeneous of degree one; it's homogeneous of degree zero. So you will be closer to a singular integral operator if you want. But they are not standard singular integral operators, okay? Because it's very much the picture I made before, right? Given x, you have to integrate basically in the orthogonal direction. I cannot tell you. Okay, if you can find it, I will be more happy if you explain that to me. Okay? Yeah. Yes?
Just to remark that the result is Belfield from 86, and I think at least for the linear part, it has probably failed.
Yeah, okay. Quite likely. I mean, this is in fact in the. I don't know that result. I will be very happy if you tell me. But this particular result is in the thesis by Rollbaum, which was as far as. Maybe 98 or 97, something like that. Okay? Well, okay. Good to know. Okay, thank you.